Welcome to Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show Adley and Josh Goldberg here with you as the Blue Jays complete a demolition of the Orioles. 22-7, owning of that team. Brandon Hyde getting some instant karma, Josh, as the Blue Jays score 40-plus runs since he jotted Robbie Ray on Friday night. They hit two grand slams, and this one, the first time in franchise history that's ever happened. And boy, Josh, Steven Matz getting some run support. He allows 5 runs over 6 innings of work. And yet, you know, it's funny. You and I have followed some real stinkers of Jays games sometimes where gems from the starting rotation are completely wasted. And then you get games like today where it's a laugher from beginning to end. The entire team staying red hot. And I guess after a letdown in game one, the team walking away from Camden Yards with a 3-1 series victory, which is essentially as good as it gets outside of a sweep.
Considering the way that this series unfolded, you lose the first game with Robbie Ray on the mound, and you're just thinking, well, like, it would be really good if you could somehow find a way to win the next 3 games, because leaving with a split would have been very, very disappointing. Like, I don't know how you can be that upset, but considering the state of affairs in the playoff race right now, games against the Baltimore Orioles, you got to do your best to take as much advantage as possible. And to go from losing on Friday night and being down in the 9th inning or 7th inning, I guess, of both games yesterday, to taking 3 out of 4, it's honestly unbelievable that they were able to pull that off. And it just seemed like maybe they broke the will a little bit of Baltimore with the way that the 2 games unfolded yesterday, because they just didn't have it today from the get-go pitching-wise. And the Blue Jays took advantage, full advantage. And there's a chance, you know, Boston's losing right now in the bottom of the 8th inning to the White Sox, that they'll be tied for the first American League wildcard spot at the end of play today, which, again, is just crazy to say.
Yeah, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. I mean, it's, what was it, August 27th, 26th, 27th, when it looked like the team was, I don't know, just like a step away from being dead in the water. So, yeah, I've said this before multiple times over the last week on Jays Talk that I was wrong about how the next several weeks were going to go. And, you know, everyone has done the math that, you know, if the Blue Jays go, if they continue to win at the pace they have been winning, when it comes to the rest of the series going forward, they can now kind of afford to, like, a little slippage, even though that's not what you want to see. Certainly a 3-game series against the Tampa Bay Rays in the next 3 games is going to be something of a, I don't want to say litmus test, because the Rays are clearly the best team in the entire American League. So, you probably could say that for any team who hopes to compete for any sort of playoff success. If you compare them to the Rays, that's a tall order, right? But at the same time, you want, after such huge wins, the 11-10 win in game 1 of the doubleheader, the 11-2 win in game 2 of the doubleheader, and now this 22-7 win in the fourth game of this series, you want to see what the Blue Jays can do against the Tampa Bay Rays pitching staff, because, you know, we know the Blue Jays have had their troubles with the Rays in the past, and certainly that extends to their play down at the Trop in Tampa. But hey, this 3-gamer starting tomorrow is at Rogers Center, and I mean, the Blue Jays, since coming home, since the border reopened and they've been back at Rogers Center, back in the city of Toronto, I mean, their fortunes have been much improved, specifically playing at home.
Well, and things line up relatively nicely pitching wise for the Jays in this series. You're talking about Manoa goes tomorrow, and then Jose Berríos, who's coming off of a really good start against the Yankees, and 3 straight gems, honestly. And then Robbie Ray, who's looking for a bounce back on Wednesday against Tampa Bay. So really lines up nicely. I know Drew Rasmussen's supposed to pitch one of the games. Michael Wacha as well. I think tomorrow's TBA. Like, the Rays, yeah, they'll find a way, right? It's just because their pitching on paper doesn't look great. It hasn't looked that great all season long. Tyler Glasnow hasn't pitched in months, and they're still finding ways to get it done. But, like, it is a really interesting sort of case and test, because you're playing incredible baseball. What are you, 10-1 in the month of September? And the Rays are the Rays. And if you're not playing good baseball, we've seen this time and time again over the last couple of years, the Rays find ways to take advantage. If you're not sharp, you're sloppy, you're making careless mistakes. Right now, the Blue Jays, for the most part, are trying to avoid doing stuff like that. And if one facet of their game isn't going as it wasn't yesterday, in the first game, weren't pitching, and then the hitting bailed them out, and then they couldn't hit in the second game, and then all of a sudden it came alive. They're finding ways to win, but you're going to have to execute across the board against a team like the Rays if you want to beat them 2 out of 3 or sweep them in a series.
So let me ask you this, Josh. How much of what we saw over the past three games, the first two games of the doubleheader and today, so in the last essentially like 24 hours of baseball, essentially, how much of what we saw is the Blue Jays being very, very impressive, and certainly anytime you score 22 runs in a game, I don't care who you're facing, that's going to be impressive to some degree. But, you know, they were only two runs, I believe, away from the franchise record for most runs scored in a game. But either way, like, how much of this is the Orioles just being truly one of the, if not the worst team in Major League Baseball, and the Blue Jays getting hot at the right time, or the Blue Jays truly going out of their way and being super impressive?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. Like, obviously, you can only play and take hacks against the pitchers that are in front of you, and the Orioles are not good in terms of pitching, right, and run prevention. They give up a ton of runs, and the Blue Jays have been swinging a really good bat in the month of September. So it wasn't all that surprising that they were going to be able to have offensive success. But, like, against a better team, it's hard to say. I just think that, you know, considering the way that they've been playing, if they were able to execute and, you know, have good at-bats, they were going to score a lot of runs these days against pretty much any team. But when you're talking about a team like the O's, you have to take that into consideration, that it's the O's, and that's going to make you look great or better. But, like, I'm not really saying that this was a byproduct of playing Baltimore. Like, the Blue Jays are playing good baseball right now, and I think whoever's in front of them with the way that they're playing right now, they're going to have a really good chance to win and do a lot of damage.
You're listening to Jays Talk here, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show Ali and Josh Goldberg with you for another about 25 minutes or so here across the Sportsnet Radio Network, as the Blue Jays complete a 22-7 demolition of the Baltimore Orioles down at Camden Yards. They take the series 3-1. And I remember, Josh, before, I guess it was right before game one of the series, it was I think we were doing the post-game show for the last game of the Yankees series, right? That four-game series. And I forget who it was, but someone texted in. If you want to text in right now, 590-590, you're always welcome. We'll get to your text coming up in a little bit. But someone had texted in to ask us, is, like, the way this team is playing, is it a huge disappointment if you don't sweep the Orioles? And I think you and I both basically agreed that it wouldn't be a huge disappointment, if only because it's a hard thing to sweep a team. It's a hard thing to sweep a team more than three games. It's a hard thing to beat a team four straight times in 3 days. And we both basically said that a 3-1 result in terms of a series would be exactly what you want, right? A 2-2 series split, or a 1-3, heaven forbid, would be something you really don't want to have to talk about, because that means something has gone horribly wrong. But I find it so fascinating, because all season, or at least for much of the season, the starting rotation has been the thing that has picked up the team more, maybe not more often than not, but definitely recently it has felt like. And then, of course, today it was the complete opposite. And really yesterday, for both games, that was the case as well, right? I mean, Hyunjin Ryu, we talked about that. Thomas Hatch, it was kind of a, not obviously not a bullpen day, but it wasn't one of the main starting guys starting the game too. And then Hatch only ended up going, what, four innings before being lifted with the hamstring injury. So, and then today, of course, Steven Matz. And you know what? Matz wasn't as sharp as he has been maybe over the past, what, five, six starts we have seen out of Matz, so basically over the course of 3-4 weeks. But, Hey, in the end, it didn't end up mattering. And Steven Matz, I think, I don't know about you, I'm not super concerned about Steven Matz. I think it's just the entire game was a little sloppy from top to bottom. And Steven Matz, again, you know, you look at what's going to be on the schedule for him coming up, and I think you still, like, most people, I bet, probably still have more faith in Steven Matz at this point, probably, than Hyunjin Ryu, which is unfortunate to say.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any question about it, because Steven Matz, you know, he has that mid-90s velo that, like, maybe even if you're not spotting your stuff quite as well, you can still miss some bats because you're able to dial it up a little bit more. Whereas Ryu, you know, even if he's throwing 91, if he's missing his spots a little bit, he's still going to be in some trouble. And if they're laying off of his changeup, then he's probably going to be in for a really long afternoon like we saw yesterday. But, like, today, you know, Steven Matz gave you six innings. You take that and run with it. You didn't have to use any of your leverage relievers. You know, Trent Thornton ate up two innings, and then Julian Merriweather, I didn't think he was particularly impressive. He wasn't missing many bats, relied on contact, but you got the thing in the refrigerator, and that's honestly all you can ask for with a game like this. But, like, it's hard. I feel like it's got to be hard psychologically to pitch in a game where your offense is on the field for a bunch of time in these half innings, and you're trying to stay as loose as possible, and you're sitting on your butt maybe for longer than you're accustomed to in between innings. And all things considered, yeah, he gave up a couple of homers, but to still go six innings and allow your bullpen a much needed day to not really have to do much, that's what we were talking about before the game, was just maybe use Thornton and maybe somebody else in low leverage and you'd be good to go. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happens. You got to be thrilled with that.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Trent Thornton real quick. As you're listening to Jace Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Show and Josh with you for another 25 minutes or so. And yeah, Trent Thornton, he throws two innings. Let me see here. He ends up throwing, he wasn't great, right? I mean, 49 pitches, 33 of them strikes. But it just felt, and Ben talked about this on the broadcast, the idea that Thornton was nibbling around the strike zone virtually every single batter. And it made the game go so much longer than it probably should have, considering the score at that point. He gave up a one home run. He gave up two earned runs on the whole. He issued a walk. He had four strikeouts as well, two hits. I don't know. And on the whole, again, Trent Thornton wasn't terrible, but at the same time, I think I've seen enough from Trent Thornton to know that beyond this season, he probably doesn't need to be a member of this pitching staff.
Yeah, I was surprised to see he was back up here today, but I guess it was just, you know, Castro pitched and in the event that you needed somebody today, it's just a fresh arm. And like, it's entirely possible that he's back in AAA tomorrow and you're just kind of taxiing guys in and out for that last spot in the bullpen. But yeah, I don't really know what Trent Thornton's role is. Like, you don't obviously don't want him starting games for you in any form. And he just doesn't seem to have enough in the tank, I think, as a reliever to get outs consistently. Like, there's just, it's too laborious. There's just a lot of taxing innings where he's throwing a lot of pitches and a lot of deep counts and stuff. And as a relief pitcher, you want to be able to quickly work and get some quick strikeouts and work through some quick innings. And he just doesn't have plus enough stuff, even out of the bullpen, when it might play up a little bit more and you have more life on your stuff, to consistently do that. So I don't know what his future is. Maybe some other team looks at him and maybe is interested. Maybe there's something to be said for a deal of some sort that gives him an opportunity to start some games. But I don't think that his role on this club is anything other than just depth in the event that you have injuries.
It's just funny, right? Because when it comes to Thornton, it really feels like he has more trust from the coaching staff than I feel like I have from anyone in my personal life. He will continue to come up in huge spots. It really doesn't really matter if it's a huge spot or not. I take it back. He'll come up at any point, be called up at any point this season, and pitch in virtually any situation. And I just, you know, early on, I think it was they were putting him in rough spots. It, you know, wasn't entirely fair to him. That happened to a lot of different guys in this pitching staff. But now that things have gotten a little more solidified, like you said, you still want to see a little more consistency out of Julian Merriweather. You want to see a little more consistency out of Nate Pearson. You want to see that a little more from, I mean, maybe you don't need to see it more, but you're still going to get more innings from guys like Soria and Simber and Richards and Meza certainly as well. Romano right there in the inner circle of trust. So with all of those names I mentioned, I mean, you're certainly going to see innings from Taylor Sesedo from time to time and other guys as well. But I don't know, man. I think when it comes to the rest of this race, unless it's a situation exactly like we saw today, I don't think I really have any interest in seeing Trent Thornton for the rest of the season. But I mean, like you said, is there really another guy on this squad who is going to be used in like the lowest of leverage situations at this point, who's not already a starter? Probably not, I would imagine.
I guess Taylor Sesedo.
Like, he's really it, right?
Is it. Yeah, he's your low leverage guy. And the Blue Jays just have had such few, the low leverage situations and circumstances for this club have been so few and far between over, like, it really seems all season, but certainly since the All-Star break, there's been a lot of high tension games. And to have one today where you could lean on a lower leverage guy out of your bullpen was kind of a breath of fresh air, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair. All right, let's take a quick break, Josh. And when we come back, we will get to all of your texts on the text line, 590-590, name and location. I see a whole bunch. So still some time to send those in as we're here for another 20 minutes. But you're listening to Jace Talk, Show and Josh across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
He's making it rain sunflower showers in the dugout. Teoscar Hernandez and the Toronto Blue Jays play here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The 1-0. Hernandez swings and he drives it deep right field, stopping at the wall because it is gone! Blue Jays with two grand slams. Teoscar Hernandez with a new career high, 27 home runs. And this one is for the record books. A grand slam for Teoscar Hernandez. The Blue Jays lead 14-3.
There you go. Absolutely monstrous home run from Teoscar Hernandez to, really, I mean, I don't want to say blow the game open. The game was blown open long before, as we welcome you back to Jay's Talk here, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show and Josh with you for another, 15 to 18 more minutes. And, that Teo home run, like you heard Ben say it, the second grand slam of the game. It was the first time in franchise history two grand slams were hit in a single game. And I believe, Josh, I could be wrong, you heard Ben say that it was a new career high for Teo in home runs. I believe that also pushed him over the 100 RBI mark, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 102. And really just a quiet consistency. He had that kind of rough stretch in late August into early September. But outside of that, when he's been in the lineup, he's been really, really good and a real presence in the middle of that lineup, whether he's cleaning up or batting fifth. Quietly, probably going to have 110 RBIs this year. Very decent chance he gets to 30 or more home runs. And we're not really going to be talking about him all that much. And I think that just kind of hammers home how staggering the rest of this offensive attack is, that somebody like Teoscar Hernandez with a 30 homer potential, 110 RBI season kind of flies under the radar and, you know, it, like, eludes people when really diving into what this offense is all about.
It's true. He does sometimes feel like, I mean, not like, not to us, not to you or I, not to Blue Jays fans, but when you hear the talk about the Blue Jays on a national level, and when I say national, I guess I should really say international level when it comes to North America, I suppose, right? But on a league-wide level, when it comes to all the chatter that surrounds the Blue Jays, it is almost always about, certainly with good reason too, George Springer. It's about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. because he is in the hunt for the Triple Crown, and we can talk about that shortly. It's always about Bo Bichette, but Teoscar Hernandez, Marcus Semien certainly as well, and Teoscar Hernandez kind of gets lost by the wayside a little bit, I feel like, sometimes, which it seems unfair. Maybe it's because there was that period of time, what are we going to say, maybe 2 or 3 weeks of time where he was really just really struggling. I don't know if he was in his head at the plate or what have you. And then over the last little while, I mean, really everyone has been on fire over this, what, 10-1 stretch. But at the same time, they have been, he specifically, I should say, has been phenomenal. And also he got plunked twice today. Once in the leg, just below the kneecap on the kind of bony side of your knee. And then of course, once right on his fingers, like right where those tons of little bones in your fingers, right? So that Teoscar Hernandez stayed in the game for as long as he did and hit the grand slam certainly as well. He has been absolutely phenomenal. You and I have had the contract talk before, but I honestly have no real doubt that Teoscar Hernandez is going to remain a member of this ball club for a long time to come. I mean, we talk about the core. He is as close to being a part of the core just as much as Vladdy, Bo, and Springer are going forward, I would think.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. He's got a couple of arbitration years. Whether you continue going through arbitration or you sign him to a reasonable length contract, like, he's not going to be wearing anything other than a Blue Jays uniform for the foreseeable future. And he's an important part of what you want to do. He kind of ties the lineup together in a lot of respects, because if you have trouble with the likes of, you know, Semien, like, again, assuming he's here, we'll see. Or,
right.
Yeah, just like Bo and Vladdy, certainly. Then Teoscar is the type of bat who makes you pay on a pretty consistent basis. So he's going to be here. He's gotten a little bit better defensively, more of an improvement than I think a lot of people were expecting, where he's not a liability or really anything approaching that. Yeah, he still makes some head-scratching plays from time to time, get some poor reads on some balls in right field, but for the most part, like, he's become a pretty well-rounded baseball player. And like, I don't know what the situation is going to be in terms of a contract. I'm sure they're going to try and figure something out. Wouldn't be the least bit surprised, but yeah, no concerns whatsoever that Teoscar Hernandez is going to be anything but a Blue Jay for quite a long time.
What were the conditions of that trade with Teoscar? Was that the Francisco Liriano and Nori Aoki trade?
Yes.
It was, right? Yeah, okay. That was what a phenomenal trade. I mean, I know we've said that before. It's not like exactly like a breaking hot take or anything like that, but you and I have talked about the Simber trade and the Richards trade from this season, and certainly the idea that maybe the single season deals for both Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien, in terms of what they signed this past offseason, are up there with in terms of like great value this Blue Jays front office has acquired over their short tenure here in Toronto. But I mean, I would put up that Teoscar Hernandez deal with almost any other deal they've made so far, I think.
I think it's number one, to be totally honest, just in terms of what the cost was and the impact. Like as great as the Simber Dickerson trade has been, like Teoscar Hernandez becoming an All Star and a Silver Slugger, and it costing you Francisco Liriano, was not really the type of trade that anyone ever would have expected. So like in terms of what it's turned into, I think it takes the cake. I think it's in a tier unto itself.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the Jays did get back Liriano a year or two later, and then I want to say Nori Aoki was immediately DFA'd, and I don't even think he plays a season after, maybe two seasons later or a season and a half or something, I don't even think he was playing in Major League Baseball anymore. I think he went back to Japan. So yeah, I think that's definitely one of the better trades the Blue Jays have made, certainly with this front office, and we've talked about that. People texted before about how maybe the front office needs to get more credit with Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, so hey, that's one big piece of credit right there, because again, yeah, Teoscar Hernandez, over 100 RBI this year, a new career high in home runs as well with today's game. Absolutely phenomenal stuff from him. But let's get to the text line, 590-590, name and location. Let's see here. I see Ruben in Alberta. This was texted in while we were talking about the upcoming series against the Tampa Bay Rays. And Ruben says, hey guys, I wouldn't put the Rays on such a high pedestal. The Jays could easily be up in the season head-to-head series. The only part the Rays are better than the Jays is the bullpen, in my opinion. That's from Ruben in Alberta.
That's fair. That's 100% fair. How many times have we talked about, whether it's been this year or last year, or especially this year though, that the Jays have way more talent than the Rays do, but the Rays just generally are more consistent in terms of how they execute, right? They don't make a lot of careless mistakes. They don't have a lot of peaks and valleys. They're pretty consistent, and the way that they play is pretty consistent, and I think it stands up to the rigors of 162 games. Yeah, they're definitely better, deeper, all of it in the bullpen. Yeah, the Jays have had their opportunities this year. They've blown a handful of games against the Rays. Like, I don't think that the Jays should be huge underdogs or anything in this series. They should be looking at it as an opportunity to really kind of send a message and punctuate yourself as a legitimate threat going forward. But like, the Rays are tough. So if you're not sharp, like I said, over and over, they're a team that is basically built to prey on your weaknesses. Or if you're not sharp in any way, shape, or form, the way that the Rays operate, their whole MO is to take advantage of those weaknesses. So the Jays have to be on their game, or we're going to see a lot of what has kind of come to define the Tampa Bay Rays and the Toronto Blue Jays, which is them sort of head-scratchingly winning ball games, even though you look at their roster and you're left kind of wondering, like, how the hell did that just happen?
Yeah, it's true. The Rays are just, like, I have learned my lesson over the past however many years about consistently doubting the Rays. I feel like every year I like to say, yeah, it's the Yankees the year this year. It's the Red Sox year this year. It's not going to be the Rays year this year. And yet they're doing what they're doing, however many games above 500 they are. It's remarkable. And I know people don't like to hear so much praise for the Rays on Jays talk, for example. I know that not Rays talk, it's Jays talk. But at the same time, until they are dethroned, I feel like you have to give them at least a decent amount of respect, right? Because the Blue Jays have had their troubles with the Rays recently. But I don't entirely disagree that the Jays, the difference right now between these two ball clubs is not quite as large. But of course, the bullpen situation for the Rays is what it is compared to the Blue Jays. Let's go back to the text line, 590-590. Okay, I remember before, Josh, you and I had read something. I think it was someone had a question about playoff rotations, and you were like, absolutely not. We're not doing that. No one has texted in about that today, so everyone understands. Everyone, you know, gets the message. But I do see one, but people asking about, is it too crazy to talk about the division lead? I see Kyler in Kelowna, and let's see, Liam in Ottawa. Liam saying, if the Jays sweep the Rays, Do we talk about a potential division race with 2 weeks left? Big if, obviously, but if it happens, what do you think? And Kyler saying, is it too crazy to say on the very far ahead horizon with 6 games to play and now 9 back of Tampa, the Jays can see the division right now and that they can maybe take a run at it? Look, I mean, I don't know where you fall on this, Josh, but the playoff path, maybe I'm doubling down on saying something I shouldn't, but I said at the end of August that maybe the path to the playoffs was a little, it was there, but it was a treacherous one. And it certainly seems far less treacherous now. So maybe I shouldn't say the division is out of reach, but I feel like we should maybe focus on the playoffs first as a whole, the wild card spot, before we look at a division race where in our division where Tampa leads by, I don't even know, like in terms of how many games are over 500 and all these things. Yeah. I'm not going to hold my breath for the division lead here.
They're 9 back. You're not catching the Rays. Like, just because, like, I understand you're on cloud 9 right now and you just gained, what was it, 8.5, 9 or some games on the Yankees in a really short period of time. I understand you have 6 against Tampa. If you win all 6, okay, maybe, but like, you got to focus on the wild card at this point. Focus on making the playoffs first before your eyes are getting bigger at the division. Like, one thing is more in your control than the other. Like, the division is a pipe dream. It's a pipe dream's pipe dream. It's not happening. Focus on the wild card. You got a shot potentially at hosting a playoff game. That's where all the attention needs to be right now. Not making up 9 games. And I think where they have 19 games left.
I think so.
Come
yeah.
On. Come
yeah.
on.
Yeah, it's unlikely. Very, very unlikely. I know I've learned my lesson about it, but I mean the path to the playoffs much clearer. Their destiny is in their own hands, as a lot of people like to say when talking about the playoffs. Certainly for the Blue Jays, they just got to win the remaining games and the remaining series on the schedule. After the Rays series, I mean, still games against the Orioles to come, games against the Twins to come, and one last series against the Yankees to come that I have a feeling will prove to be pretty crucial down the rest of this playoff stretch. But you're listening to Jays Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Sho and Josh with you for a couple more minutes. We'll step aside. When we come back, we'll wrap up on the text line and hear some post-game audio. Jake Lamb spoke to Hazel May after this ball game, but you're listening to Jays Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers across the Sportsnet radio network.
Blink, and they're back in the game, because as long as they have outs, they have a shot. The Toronto Blue Jays play here on the Sportsnet radio network.
Welcome back to Jays Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Sho and Josh with you for a couple more minutes as the Blue Jays win it 22-7 over the Baltimore Orioles. Yes, that is the correct score. And the Blue Jays take a 3-1 series lead home to Toronto. Well, they will play the Tampa Bay Rays for the first of 3 starting tomorrow. So, Josh, we've been checking the out-of-town scoreboard basically all day, right? The Mets-Yankees game, the Subway Series, that'll happen a little later on tonight. That's the Sunday nighter. But just now, just moments ago, on the TVs here in Baseball Control, I just saw Lourie Garcia walking off the Boston Red Sox
for
the White Sox. So the White Sox winning this one 2-1 as Lourie Garcia hitting a walk-off home run against Garrett Whitlock. So, another win for the Chicago White Sox, and Boston loses again.
So the Jays and Red Sox are tied, and I think by virtue of I'm not actually sure who technically gets the, I guess the Red Sox have this season series won, so they'd technically be the tiebreaker in that situation to sit in the first wild card spot. But you're in a playoff position right now, I guess. And if the Yankees win, then you're still, I guess, tied, technically. Yeah, I guess they'll be 80-63. Jays will be 80-63. And the Red Sox are 81-64. It's a wild ride right now. The next couple of weeks are going to be crazy.
And don't forget, I mean, if you're paying attention, like you're scoreboard watching like we are, don't forget that the Yankees and Red Sox play each other one more time. There's another 3-game series coming between the Yankees and Red Sox. So at least one of Boston and New York are going to lose 2 of those 3 games. Like, someone is going to lose 2 of those 3 games.
Good point.
So either way, whether it's the Yankees or the Red Sox, the Blue Jays are going to benefit from that one more time, basically, right? And then, as I mentioned before, another series against the Yankees later on. I think it's the second last series of the year, the last series being one more against the Orioles. All right, before we hit the break, or before we wrap up here on Jays Talk, I wanted to play a little bit of this. Jake Lamb getting his first career home run, former NL All-Star Jake Lamb getting his first career home run earlier in today's 22-7 demolition of the Orioles. He spoke to Hazel May after the ballgame.
Jake Lamb, congratulations on a nice series with the Orioles. A couple of hits yesterday and your first homer as a member of the Blue Jays this afternoon. What have you liked about the way you've handled your at-bats this weekend?
I was just slowing down a little bit. you know, I felt good. I was being aggressive, and yeah, the homer felt good. Everyone, I feel like everyone's been putting this jacket on, so I wanted to, see if it fit me a little bit. But yeah, I mean, this team's so talented, and there's so many great hitters on this team. So just being a part of it's a lot of fun.
Let me ask you about the jacket. I was going to wait till the end there.
Oh, well, let's talk about it.
How would you rate your runway strut and pose? Because I heard George say afterwards when you walked away, that was the best pose we've had all season.
Yeah, it was. I haven't even seen all the poses. I'll probably put it top three. I mean, it was. I'm very confident in that pose. But the runway probably could have been better.
It was a little crowded.
I'll have to see the film on it and slow it down. But yeah, like I said, it was nice to get one over the fence there and just contribute.
That's Jake Lamb speaking a little bit with Hazel May after the end of this ballgame, Josh. And again, he got his first career home run as a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. He has been a little more productive as of late, certainly as of this last weekend. He played third base today. Thoughts on Jake Lamb's spot? I know we talked about him in the pregame. And again, this first home run for him, I think it's nice to have him on the squad and nice to have guys who produce like that when needed.
Yeah, that's why Jake Lamb's in the lineup. Extra base hit pop came through today, back-to-back good games, and I think we're going to see him a decent bit against right-handed pitching going forward.
Absolutely. Jake Lamb getting his first home run as the Blue Jays win it 22-7. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball powered by Jack Link. Send hunger down to the minors and feed your wild side. Jays take the 3-1 series over the Orioles, and now we'll face the Rays at Rogers Center on Monday. For Tom, Ben, Josh, I'm Sho. Enjoy your Sunday afternoon, everyone. We'll talk to you on Monday night.